The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. It is that time of the week. It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show on just today. This, the greatest Tuesday you've had all week. I'm your host, Dave Littlejohn. Joining me in studio today,
Matt Dixon.
And Matt?
Yes.
Today, as a father of a nearly two-year-old now, I think. Nearly three-year-old now. See, when I say nearly two, it could have been under.
Yeah.
Right? I you know, you made it. See, thanks.
Yeah,
everybody
I
assumed I thought less than two, but no. Nearly
it's
two.
Getting close.
Nearly three. Still, you know what? He's still near to two.
Let's
than
just
the 40.
Call it two and a half. Then
whatever.
Then
we're going to talk about bubbles.
Are you
that's
like
the segue. That was the segue.
Bathtub bubbles?
Maybe.
Oh, boy.
Maybe.
What type of bubbles are we talking about?
Yeah,
here?
Saliva. That's the kind we don't want to talk about.
Can you blow those?
I haven't tried in a long time. Not interested in trying now. Now, you know, it seems like the right thing to talk about just in light of everything that has been kind of running around these days. There's all these rumors about, oh, you know, the sky is going to fall because this is like .com all over again with AI and it's the end of the world.
Oh, so you're talking about the type of bubble where assets start to reprice like outside of their kind
of
fundamental
just
value.
Asset bubbles. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. So that's kind of the big picture theme today, because what I'm getting is I hear people are nervous.
Mm-hmm.
They're watching the fact that the stock market went kind of up. And then in the last, 4 or 5 weeks, it's just sort of stalled out. And there's been some volatility. There's been some rough days here and there where it's like, oh man, the markets are way down, which that also, we, a lot of folks are fixated on hyperbolic language.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, the market's crashing. I'm like, it's down like 1%. What kind of crash are we talking about here? Like,
yeah.
1%? Jeez.
Well, when the market goes up 2% to 3% and then it has another up day where it's up 0.5% and then it goes up again. And all it does is go up and up for year over year.
But just for context, like my body weight shifts more than 1% day to day. So just how much water
did
I drink?
Body
you
weight
know?
Is crashing.
So yes, it's like a crash diet. I would lose like a couple pounds. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that's a crash, huh? The language I think invokes a certain amount of fear that's unnecessary. And the good news is because we have brilliant listeners, right? We have the smart ones listen to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's only the idiots that don't listen to us. Okay, subtle.
Make them feel good,
but we don't need to panic about the headlines that we get. I am reminded, why do we get these headlines?
Well, you got to get people to click on things.
Yeah, because it works.
Yeah.
That's the issue. Remember, even now as you're listening to this, I will sort of out ourselves that this is a bit of a paid advertisement, this show.
Right.
Right? Now, what are we peddling? Mostly credibility and the idea that perhaps there's a fit one day where somebody says, these folks you've been listening to, I have a need. I think maybe it's aligned. Maybe I'll give them a shot.
Yeah.
And how do we build that? Well, first of all, we give it away. Like the stuff that we talk about, we're gonna there's no knowledge gap that we're willing to that we're trying to hide something from you. We'll just tell you how it works as best we can. And if you want to go do it yourself, awesome, do it, right? How many people just don't get to it or they don't have enough time, they don't want to put the effort into it for whatever reason?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are our people. But since we have the smart listeners, that makes it way easier today. So our smart listeners don't let a day or two in the markets rattle them.
No. Nope, they do not.
So, and we're talking about the market, okay? Because this language of bubble candidly, it's kind of scary because the last two times we had bubbles, they ended up pretty rough.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, 2008 was pretty rough. Homeowners or home buyers really went through the ringer on that. Some people made a bunch of money too, just so we're being clear about this. There were some people that made a ton of money in 2008 when there was a real estate bubble. The one before that, 2000, the dot-com bubble. And that's what I hear a lot about. Now, I want to talk about that today, Matt, this idea of how people are comparing AI to the dot-com bubble. So first, is it a fair comparison? But before that, we got to figure out what is a bubble?
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, well, first of all, bubbles pop, right? Like that's kind of the characteristic of a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And I think why people are saying that this might be a bubble is because we've seen a lot of people investing in AI at a really rapid rate, right? Like a lot of people are trying to get in. My neighbor made a bunch of money on NVIDIA. I want in on that too. Bitcoin has been a frenzy. And so it seems like people have been piling money into the market because they don't want to miss out, right? And so the question is just like, how profitable is AI going to be? And, you know, are valuations going to continue to inch higher? Or at some point, are the big hedge funds going to throw in the towel and say it's time to start selling?
So, yeah. What's funny is I think what's lost on a lot of people is that there are mechanics to investment markets. Mechanics mm-hmm. meaning what actually makes the price of something move around. So a bubble
at just its tons base, of sellers.
Well, yeah. It gets inflated. Okay. Mm-hmm. That like the part of a why we use the term bubble is something's getting inflated.
Right. And you could argue right now that stuff is inflated because there are like mathematical ways to measure how much money you're paying to buy a company's like earnings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so we know it's a fact that that ratio right now is pretty high compared to where it normally is.
Mm-hmm.
So we do have that kind of working against us here.
And here's the other problem with bubbles. They can pop.
Mm-hmm.
So the two things we keep an eye on is they inflate and they pop. But let's talk about the mechanics of the market for a second and why the price can get so high. A lot of people, I believe, mistakenly believe that the price of something is very high because everybody agrees that the price should be really high. And I want to cite an example here. So I was just at a charity auction over the weekend.
Okay.
And the way an auction works is everybody starts with an item and you start with a low price and how many people are willing to buy it. And then the auctioneer says, okay, well, I got this many people willing to buy it here and I can't have all of you own it because there's only one thing. So what do we have? Limited supply and there's still excess demand. So what do? We raise the price in real time.
Yeah.
And then what do people do? They sort of compete with each other. And in a frenzied environment, with the right circumstances, the price can sometimes be much higher for an item than it would typically go in a more calm market environment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But in an auction environment, when there's
which is the stock market,
a lot of frenzied information here, moving quick, the price goes higher, and then you lose some participants, but there's still some left.
Mm-hmm.
And the price goes higher, and you lose some more participants until eventually you get down to the last person, and that's the one that wins with the highest bid.
Yeah.
And we've all seen that's the highest bid. But that is the stock market.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing that is missed. If there's not a lot of sellers, but there are a lot of buyers, the price goes higher.
Yeah.
If there's not a lot of buyers, but there's a lot of sellers, the price goes down.
Mm-hmm.
But what if you don't have a lot of buyers or sellers? Then it's whatever limited transactions occur.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a mentor that used to talk about how it's the aggressiveness of the buying or the selling that determines the market movements. And that's what traders look at, is
sure.
How aggressive is a trend. And I see a lot of that in some of the AI spend right now. Now, they're still relatively high volume in these stocks because they become very, very popular. But that's a little bit like saying, well, there's a lot of transactions in Bitcoin. Right? We're not creating more Bitcoin.
Right.
There's a lot of people jockeying it back and forth, though. And there's now a lot of derivative markets around Bitcoin. Right? Matt, just so our listeners know what we're talking about, because you and I know what I'm talking about. What do I mean by derivatives?
Basically, they're looking into the future and saying, you know, where might the price be? And then they're kind of making some bets on that. And so they're placing their money on where they think the price will move in the future.
Yeah. The derivative is a created instrument.
Yeah.
You know, oh, I have Bitcoin. But tell you what, Matt, I own some Bitcoin. I will sell you, not my Bitcoin, but the option to buy my Bitcoin at this price for an amount of time.
Yep.
Matt now owns a derivative. The base currency or the base asset was the Bitcoin. The derivative is the option to buy or sell it. And that derivative will expire at some point. But it now gives Matt the ability, in a sense, to control.
Without having to make the spend.
Without having to buy the Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Matt could sell his derivative to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have a whole new market where we've created instruments linked to other instruments.
And that can affect the underlying price if there's enough people doing that, right?
Well, because what it does is it says there might be future activity.
Mm-hmm.
If you exercise your option, because let's say that the price of Bitcoin goes significantly higher, I'm forced to provide you the Bitcoin at the price that I gave you the option for.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did get paid the money when I sold you the option, right? So I got some option income from
right.
it. But I could be forced higher, to liquidate the Bitcoin. You could then turn around and sell it for a profit if the price is much higher. So what it does is it creates future transactions.
Yeah.
And so that complicates the marketplace.
Sure.
And I think it's really important to understand that the market, a lot of these really large AI companies, these stocks that have gone up really bigly, right? The stocks that have gone up bigly, they oftentimes have huge derivative markets around them.
Yeah, Tesla's like one of the biggest, I think.
Tesla's really huge. I think NVIDIA's become really huge. So these are just traders' instruments now. And it really does magnify the directional trends of these things. And so sometimes what you have is lower trading volume, but you have higher volume of options behind it that can then on specific dates push the market around because of whether or not people are exercising those options.
Yeah.
So all of that to say that this fuels the bubble potentially because you may not have as many actual buyers, but you have a bunch of connected derivative buyers that are sort of pushing the markets around a little bit.
Hmm.
So anyway.
So do you think that this is a bubble then? Or do you think that maybe it's not? Like, where are we sitting today?
Super interesting question.
Because we've kind of defined what it is. But, I mean, are we living 1999 again? Or is this a different time and a different structure in the market?
Well, here's what we do. I want everybody to get their pagers out.
Okay.
Okay. And we're going to come back to this issue after this break and we'll talk about it, right?
Awesome.
What's this look like? Does it look like 99 all over again? Should we all be getting computer science degrees? I don't know, but we'll talk about it more when we come back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True All on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
We can't. No, we're not doing it again. Oh. Please.
What if you double down?
Welcome back to the True Well Show, all gang. Right. Dave Littlejohn joining me in studio.
Matt Dixon.
And this is all... Well, it's actually technically it's being streamed live on YouTube right now, but not because we're telling you to go watch it. That's just so we can capture the video and use it later. But the podcast will be available. And so you can grab us at littlejohnfs.com or go to your favorite local podcast service and subscribe to Little John Financial there and the True Well Show. So we're talking about bubble markets.
Yep.
And Matt, we were really talking about here's the comparison I hear a lot. .com versus today.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that they're great comparisons. And then we also get 2008 in there, but very different. I mean, the stock market definitely got dinged hard,
mm-hmm.
but they all, the stock market of 2008, that meltdown seemed to me, and I did live through both of these and work through both of these, it did seem very different than the .com meltdown.
Okay.
Right. The .com meltdown, so it was pretty radical. Like, fundamentals didn't seem to matter. There was this phrase that was going around called, oh, this, it's the new economy, right? Mm-hmm. It's all about the number of unique users that you can get. So it was this battle for how many eyeballs that you could attract, and the revenue was just going to somehow materialize later. But we didn't worry about those things. We just worried about, the internet was virtual real estate. You had to get your stake. And so it was all about whoever was going to attract the most eyeballs was going to win. Amazon back then was a bookstore.
So, but on the, I guess on the counter side of this, right? So if the .com wasn't based on the fundamentals and it wasn't based on like revenue, right? It was just based on users. I guess one could argue that this time around we're pouring money into all these AI companies and we're not yet looking at revenue either. We're just looking at, you know, what it could potentially do in the future. Because a lot of these AI companies are hemorrhaging cash, right? Like, mm-hmm. we know that NVIDIA is making money, sure. And there's a few others. But a lot of these companies are just hand over foot, just throwing money into the pot, saying, well, we got this product that's going to be really cool and it's going to change the world. But then you have to question, will the money follow? Right? At the end of the day, the money has to follow, and you have to convert stuff to either sales or subscriptions or some sort of revenue stream. And I still feel like we're really, really early on this one to be able to tell if these companies are actually going to be able to turn a profit. Time will tell, I guess.
What's interesting to me, so just for all of you listening, here's the fun thing. Matt was around in the .com meltdown, but he wasn't in this industry and he was a lot younger.
True. Okay.
So you didn't have the boots on the ground experience that an older guy like me had.
Mm-hmm.
So dating myself here. I see today's market, and it's kind of fascinating because a lot of people just automatically apply some of the principles that were learned after the .com market.
Okay.
And now we look at the after effects and it's like it's already colored into our thinking. And so the analysis natively happens with those considerations where prior to the .com, we didn't think about those things yet. Like we hadn't learned to think about it that way. Some people were never fooled, right? We could argue Warren Buffett wasn't fooled. But Warren Buffett didn't capture any of the run-up and get out either. He just never participated. So he was sort of on the sideline, watched the markets go up, the bubble popped, it collapsed. And that was that. And it did pop hard. The NASDAQ fell about 77%.
Mm-hmm.
That was a super big collapse. And it took like 15, or I don't know, it might have been 15 years to recover.
Right.
It was a long time. It wasn't like, oh, 5 years later, it was okay. No, it took a long time for the NASDAQ to recover to the values that it previously was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last 5 years, if you had a horse race between the NASDAQ and the S&P 500, pretty sure the NASDAQ would win.
Yeah.
Right? It's really done very well, and it's that tech bias, and tech has become the big driver of our economy as the economy is globalized. So anyway, let me back up and just give you the question I wanted to ask you, Matt.
Sure.
How is the AI market different than the .com market? I mean, just throw out some of the things that not the same's easy, right? The same would be just like, well, there's a crap ton of money floating around, and we don't know if they're going to make any money on it, right?
Take the Tommy gun out and start spraying stuff here.
Yeah, just throw stuff out. Let's just kind of spitball what we think's going on. I think our listeners, a lot of people are going to have the same thoughts you are. Mm-hmm. I just want to give them some context.
Well, are we looking for differences or similarities or both?
Yes, just throw them out.
Sure. I mean, I guess during the .com bubble, it was just build a website as quickly as you can and then hope that the users show up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get it to IPO, make a bunch of money. I think that some of what we're seeing today is similar, right? We're seeing a lot of, well, just rent a supercomputer from someone like CoreWeave, try and get some sort of cryptocurrency going online, and then get a bunch of people to believe that it's real, pile them on. So, like, I still, like, I see some similarities there. I think that one of the differences maybe is I think that AI actually really can stand to eat up a lot of jobs, which could change GDP numbers, right? Mm-hmm. But big corporations, if they don't have to pay people and machines are cheaper, it could actually, you know, be a boost to corporate profits. So that's a really big difference.
Yeah.
But that's also kind of similar to the dot-com bubble, because if you're able to make sales online, you don't have to rely on brick and mortar, right? So
yes,
there's a lot of huge upside with the internet. So I think that there's a lot of similarities and a lot of differences. The main thing that I see is valuations got really steep during the dot-com bubble, and mm-hmm. valuations have gotten really steep this time around.
Yep.
And I think at some point when you push the gas pedal all the way to the floor and run it on the rev limiter, things start to blow apart,
well,
or you run out
of
fuel.
What is AI promising? Like, what is it that people
efficiency.
Are buying?
It's promising efficiency.
Okay.
And so, it's also promising more than that. It's promising robots that go into your house and wash your dishes and vacuum your floor.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So what's
the economic idea that, you know, what's the economic benefit or the economic problem that is going to spin off of this?
I mean, I guess the benefit is you're going to be able to get a lot more for a lot less, right? Like, how much would it cost for you to hire someone to clean your house 24 hours a day without stopping?
Sure.
Right? Like, a robot's going to be able to do that a lot cheaper. And so a lot of stuff is going to get a lot cheaper. It's just going to shift the dynamic of the economy.
I think what's interesting is there's sort of these a couple different thoughts. I'm going to call this sort of a fixed mindset versus a abundance mindset. Okay? I don't want to say scarcity mindset, because that's not actually the same thing. It's more like a fixed mindset. This idea that, well, we're going to lose all these jobs, and then there's not going to be any new jobs, right? AI is going to take the jobs. People aren't going to have anything to do. And so the economy is going to start to shrink because the robots can do everything cheaper, and now the people don't have jobs, so they don't have money to spend, and so it kind of creates a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that's a fixed idea that, well, there's not going to be any way to retool for these people that have been displaced by AI to find other uses in our economy. And I just don't think that's going to be the case. I think that even in computer land, it's unlikely that we find a spot where computers do and robots do everything so much better than humans that humans don't even have to bother to work. It seems far out to me. I don't know how long it would take before you had that. Now, there are a lot of, you know, dystopian authors that have suggested that, sure, that's, in fact, I think the premise of The Time Machine by, was it Orson Welles, something like that? I think that was the idea that, you know, go into the future. It was a dystopian environment where an AI basically ran everything.
Mm-hmm.
And people became, first it was like, oh, great, we're in paradise. And it became kind of a terrible idea because nobody had anything to do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not convinced that's how it shakes out.
Okay.
Because I'm not convinced that AI wants every job. There are certain analog jobs where it's like, well, what's the point? Why would I do that when I could just
have
a human do it?
AI necessarily wants anything, but I think that the biggest of the corporations, they want things, right? They want more profit. So it's like Amazon at this point, I hate to like use crazy, like extreme terms, like runs the world, but AWS, like if Amazon, we saw it just recently, Amazon goes down, the world quits working for a day, right? Like Amazon wants profit. They want to be able to not have to pay people.
So all right, here's the catch. If there are no people, what is the economy for?
Leisure.
Again, if the people can't earn money because there's no jobs, then what profits are available to corporations that have outsourced people? Nobody can earn anything. And the companies are controlling everything. There's no more profit. It's like, well, you win. You got 100% market share. You are the market. And there's no competitors, but there's also no buyers.
Unless you insert universal basic income in a way, right?
But like, inserting universal basic income just is a fixed mentality again. Everything distributes out to the percentages it distributes to, and that's that. And again, what's the point? Because earning extra money for the company doesn't go anywhere. They have no employees to pay it to.
Well, they don't have to pay the money to the employees. They just get to pocket the money.
Who's they? Even the CEO gets outsourced. There's no they left in a company where AI does everything. All right, it's a fun experiment. I'm going to let you think about it. I'm going to let our listeners think about it. We're going to grab a break. When we come back, we'll see. I want your answer to what happens if AI does everything. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got Truewell. On News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Yeah. So Alaska taxes the oil and then they give it to the people. What if you're taxing the robots' labor and then turning around and handing it to
the
people?
The robots aren't getting paid. Welcome back to the Truewell Show, everybody. Okay. Welcome back. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Yep. We are today, the show is spinning all over the place, and it's kind of awesome right now. Mm-hmm. So it started with this idea that, hey, are we in a bubble market? Mm-hmm. And what's a bubble? Hey, we've seen these before. We saw this in the dot-com era. We saw it with real estate in 2008. The question is, are we seeing it with AI? And we started talking about some of the differences, right? AI doesn't actually have an inflation-adjusted spend that was as high as the dot-com era. Not yet. It's a different kind of spend. You have companies making money and they're issuing debt in order to build infrastructure, where the dot-com bubble was much more about issuing equity for companies that weren't making any money. Mm-hmm. And everybody's buying equity, assuming they would make money. And then they didn't, and everything kind of evaporated.
Sure.
But we spun off, didn't we?
Yeah.
Because there was this theory, Matt, that you said, well, what if AI just takes over everything?
Right.
And then it's just all about profits.
Yeah.
And the question has then become, well, what if that were true? Where does it stop? If AI takes over all the jobs, then what purpose is income any longer?
And
right? There's really no material connections anymore. We're close to the dream of Star Trek. Right? Gene Roddenberry was the guy who created Star Trek, and he had this vision that in the future, if money was no longer needed because you could have anything at your disposal, what would people pursue instead? And it became higher pursuits of learning and art and exploration.
See, and I think it's possible that we actually get to a point like that, but people in their nature are lazy, right? And they're sinful. And so I look at this and I'm like, I can see a pathway where we do walk down this road and AI eats up jobs in a huge, huge way. Job numbers go way down. I could see a government push universal basic income out. And then people don't pursue all those things, right? Like the painting and the art, all that other stuff. And they just start to live in a VR world.
What do you need income for at all if all of the jobs are taken and all of the ecosystems kind of create? So like,
correct,
you don't have to farm anymore.
Correct.
The food is created.
Correct.
Because AI creates the food.
Yep.
It mines all the raw materials. It does all the things. It recycles. It does all the jobs.
What I'm basically...
So what? Where would there be income for the people?
Imagine.
Why would universal basic income even matter?
Imagine like this extreme deflationary environment. where...
But I'm telling you, you're still linking it to an economic system based on trading time for money, and there's no way to do that anymore.
The robots are the ones that are trading time and money.
They're not trading, though. The robots just do the job. So there's no trade. They just do it. So why would you need money?
You would have such an abundance that you really wouldn't need much at all. Like, money just takes on a whole different look at that point.
I'm just not
sure. Is it
sure.
likely? I don't know. But well, I'm just saying there's a route you could, like, go down where the government really gets a lot more control than it has now. And people kind of get what they get. And there's a lot of stuff, and it doesn't cost much because you've really just trashed the currency.
See, I think long before we get there, and here's my answer to this. Everybody's about to groan a little bit. Lawyers.
Okay.
Because if AI makes mistakes, where does the liability land?
On the company that used the AI agents or AI bots or whatever they are at that point.
Okay. So will AI take over law?
The lawyers would push really hard for it to not happen.
Correct. The same way politicians would push very hard to have it not happen. The same way CEOs will push very hard. And the decision makers in these organizations are going to try to protect their moat.
Mm-hmm.
That's the wild card right now that prevents AI from just running crazy. Now, the theory is more of a Terminator scenario. We create some kind of general artificial intelligence that becomes a super learner, amasses all of the knowledge in existence, coordinates all of the other AIs, and then through a combination of indifference and ambivalence will curate whatever society it's deems most efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And some people get to stick around and other people don't because it's like, well, you know, it's just resource allocation and this is most efficient, so this is what we're going to do. And the question is it a benevolent or ambivalent or malevolent system if AGI takes off like that?
What do you think?
I think it's really difficult in a system that's still dependent upon money to have a system that's benevolent.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a system that doesn't need money at all then looks different. But the question is kind of safeguards. The reality is you and I, look, there's two of us in a room. We can't even agree on, you know, we're predicting the future here, Matt. We can't agree.
Right.
I don't know how you're even going to get AIs to agree.
That would be pretty difficult. Right? Because, yeah. I mean, unless
well, if there's different objectives and they're in conflict with each other, then they're not going to agree. And the assumption that it will automatically compromise is not necessarily so. We have evidence of this, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we have evidence that there have been trading AIs that have been created, and then they try to lie to each other to gain advantages. So the AIs end up competing with each other and spoofing each other to try to get better deals.
Right.
So AI will... what? Act like people? It will do questionable things and it will try to win by whatever mechanism it's authorized to. So it kind of depends on the guardrails that it has or doesn't have.
And that's the thing is I don't think that you can ever regulate the guardrails, right? Like AI will be the wild, wild west.
Enough. AI will just, it's like trying to, it's trying to nail jello to a wall.
Yeah. If you have supercomputing, right? Like then... It is the wild, wild west because humans can't intervene fast enough to stop whatever the machine is doing.
Yeah.
Like at a certain point, we're not going to really be able to control AI. And so it's going to kind of do what it wants to do. And we'll see where the chips land.
I don't know if I want to be around to see the chips land. I'm not convinced that AI takes over. I'm just not.
I guess takes over is a pretty like broad statement. Like takes over in what way?
Here's, I think,
the issue that we haven't really baked into the pie.
Okay.
This is probably the number one thing actually driving the economy.
Which
There's
piece?
Two things. Human needs are pretty predictable. Human preferences are not.
Mm-hmm.
Preferences are really pliable, and in fact, they're really fickle. You know, I watched the evolution of language and fashion and all of these things that people do to stand out. Well, they're trying to do that to stand out for each other.
Mm-hmm.
Right? People want attention from people. So that is a whole strange algorithm to try to navigate that. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Mm.
Anyway, I'm going to pivot. We have all these theoreticals here. And the pivot is going to look like this. Okay. Let's say that AI has one of two pathways. It either goes bananas from here.
Okay.
And becomes the most valuable thing we've ever seen. It completely, the other end of it is like, it is a bubble and it bursts. Okay. I'm going to make the assumption AI sticks around and it finds its way into what we do more and more and more. But the question is financially, over the next 5 years or so, does it become a bubble that bursts or not? We need to talk about that.
Okay.
We got to take our last break.
All right,
so
I'm ready for this. This is going to get fun. This is going to get.
This is the part Matt's been ready for.
Yeah,
licking his chops. Mm-hmm. All right, so get your slide rule out and your abacus, and we're going to have some fun. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn
and Matt Dixon,
and you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Hey, gang, welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. I am Dave Littlejohn, and today we are talking about bubble markets. And Matt is super excited. Take it away.
Oh, geez. Well, where do we leave them off?
Well, what do you do? So the tale of two markets in AI. Does this become a bubble that pops and implodes? Or does this thing just keep going? And what do people, like, how do you approach this? Two radically different things. How do you approach it? As for your money, right? There's a money mm-hmm. show. So what are we talking about for investors?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the keys that we're seeing right now is holding assets for people has been a really good idea over the last few years, right? Because a lot of assets have gone up in value, whether it's the stock market, whether it's gold or silver or real estate, those are the things that you've wanted to hold. You haven't wanted to hold cash because, I mean, the dollar's lost just this year 12% of its value. So holding assets over a long period of time tends to be a pretty good idea, right? And so I don't know that, I mean, yes, I think things are overvalued. Do I think that it could pop? Sure. And I think there's a lot of things that could make it pop. You get another pandemic, right? We saw what it did.
Which we don't talk about, Bruno.
Yeah.
Why are we talking about this again?
Well, I have to, because, you know, you get people like Bill Gates saying we've got another one coming, and it's like, well.
But Bill Gates also flip-flopped on his position of global warming. Once the computers needed more power, it's like, well, maybe the globe's not warming, or maybe it's less climate change than we think.
Mm-hmm.
We need the computers.
Yeah. But
I'm not cynical or anything.
Right. No. I just think there's a lot of things between steep valuations and the fact that consumers are running out of money. There's a lot of things like regional banks are consolidating. Like there's a lot of stuff behind the scenes that just doesn't feel right. And so you put all that together and it's like, well, yeah, it might not be an AI bubble. It just might be a people are out of money and the spending stopped bubble because of a lot of different reasons. There's a million different things that could be the cocktail that kind of lights this thing off.
Mm-hmm.
But the bigger picture to me and all of it is we don't have any idea when the market's correct, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not in it, you can't stay with it. Does that make sense? Like if you're not with assets and you're not holding different things and this thing goes sideways, yeah, it might be sideways for a little bit, but timing it is nearly impossible. So,
yeah, I think
play in the pool.
There are these things that just don't go out of style for investors. Traders are going to try to figure out what's the signal to exit before the lemming scrum.
Right.
Right. We never made the t-shirt.
We didn't, but we should have.
Yes. But lemming scrum, if you guys have listened long enough, we throw that term out every now and then. It's this idea that investors sometimes, they all get frenzied. They start running toward the cliff like the rumor of the lemmings, right? And don't tell me that they don't really do that. I know that, right? But we all know the legend that the lemmings all run and fling themselves with reckless abandon off a cliff to their own death because it's just running with the herds. Like, they're just crazy. And so what we don't want to get caught up in is just running with a bunch of lemmings. We don't even know why. We're just, all right, well, we're all running this way, huh? There we go. Is that a cliff in front of us? What? Too late. We're all together now. So we don't want that. So ways that you protect yourself, one, you got to divorce yourself from the trader's mentality and start looking at the things that have historically always been wise, which is be diversified in strategy, to be diversified in asset class, be diversified in the specific holdings so that you are not overweighted into one category of the market.
Right, because there are certain categories. Like, remember when 2022 happened and the S&P was down 20-something percent? There was a lot of kind of defensive-style stocks that were up really big that year.
Correct.
So it wasn't like every single stock in the entire stock market was down. So there's always an opportunity to be had. I think it's just, are you in the right spot at the right time?
Yeah. There's a little bit of the military theory in investment management, too. If you go out, or maybe this is like a good theory for like your football team. Okay. This is a better one than the military theory, but it kind of serves the same thing.
Are you talking fantasy football team?
I'm talking actual football.
Not nearly as interesting, but go on.
Well, you tell me, okay? Why is it that receivers wear less padding than linemen?
They gotta move faster.
Okay, but what happens in terms of the exposure for injury?
It goes up.
It goes up,
yeah.
Right? So by being less armored, the receiver is more exposed. If it works out, it can be spectacular.
Right.
But if it doesn't, it can also be spectacular for the wrong reason.
Sure.
So what do? You armor up, and it reduces the frequency of injury. It doesn't eliminate it. Like, linemen get hurt, for sure.
Yeah. Bonds can get hurt.
Yeah. Well, and plenty of – so the point is not that injuries go away, but it's that what you're doing is you're mitigating them.
Yeah.
And that's the idea in investing, too, is that's what diversification does.
If you don't
does,
enter the football game, you can't win. You can't win a game.
That's true.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying, like, you got to be a participant. You can't just be a spectator in the crowd.
Now I get what you're saying.
Yes.
I was sitting there going, go on, Matt. I'm not sure what. Yeah, correct. If you don't get to make any points if you don't play.
Right.
So you're right.
And sometimes you get that investor that's like, I want to win, and I want to score a touchdown, but please don't put me in the game. Right?
Like, yeah, that's a really tough one. And I think you said something that's really wise. I want to come back to this in the last minute or two as a reminder. A lot of people, their instinct would be, you know, sell everything and bail. I'm not going to give you investment advice. I'm going to tell you what makes that particularly dangerous. One, there can be significant tax consequences if you don't know how to navigate that.
Right.
Right. Depending on the types of accounts you have, you could generate unnecessary tax issues just because in a hasty move, you have liquidated a bunch of things. So that's the first one, is don't be clumsy about tax policy. But the second one is, you referenced that the dollar has lost 12%. Now, help me out here if you can remember. I don't know if that's a 12% slide against like European currency, because I think it's had about a 12% decline against the euro. I don't know if it's lost 12% of purchasing power.
Power was how I understood that.
Because I think it's tricky how you measure that, because if you look at how the government's tracking inflation, purchasing power, you know, it's all over the board. What we know is it's significant. It's enough that you're feeling it in many areas. The problem with throwing money in a savings account or a CD is oftentimes the rate of return is lower than the rate of inflation.
Yep.
And in that case, you're actually just slowly losing money.
Right.
And if the idea is, well, it's losing money slower than if I put it in the markets, I think you're looking at the wrong time horizon. Mm-hmm. Leaving the money in the bank account for 90 days, not a big deal. But leaving it in there for 10 years, big deal.
Yeah.
Right? You're going to really miss out on some opportunity costs there, and you're going to potentially not keep up with inflation. You have so much money that you could tell people to pound sand anywhere. It's like, I don't care. I got $100 million.
Yeah.
Then put it in your checking account or whatever, right? You know, build a vault and swim in it. But you get the idea, though. If you got the kind of money where you can afford to be stupid, I guess you can. But my sense is if you have the kind of money where you got there, you're probably not going to be stupid.
Right.
But just be aware that money in the bank is not very productive. The banks know this. They get it out of there quickly. They go and make loans on it and make some money.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a good idea, the banks would hold on to it. So there we go. Well, all right, tail end of the show. Boy, we went all over the place today, didn't we?
We did. We were everywhere.
That was fun. You can tell we actually had this whole show prepped, but I think it got just more interesting to talk about how AI could change the world.
I think we did a pretty good job.
We're not sold on the outcome of the system, but I am convinced of this. While the tactics may evolve, the fundamental principles have not. That's
there
still how
go.
Investing works. So if we can give you a hand, Matt, how can they find us?
Yeah, why don't you give us a call at 541-375-0898 or just go to the website at littlejohnfs.com.
Okay. And I remind people of this. There's not an obligation with this one. This is less about us pushing to say, hire us. It's great if that's what happens. I think what we're saying is you need to do this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So take the time to make good financial decisions. If you're not going to do it yourself, find somebody that you like and trust. Okay. If you are going to do it yourself, wonderful. But if you're not, find that person. If you don't have that person, then you can give us a call. All right.
There we go.
So that's what the numbers are for. And a reminder too, that initial consults are always free. So you don't have to be nervous about that. If we're not going to run the meter on you, we just want to see if it's a good fit. So give us a call if you can. Until next time, I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 1240 and 93.9 and all that good stuff.